Hello and welcome to another episode of Marketing Room 101. I'm Ben Norman, Strategy Director at Principles in Leeds, and this is the podcast where I invite marketers for a good old rant and give them the chance to banish one thing from the industry forever. Now, I spent a fair few minutes thinking of the right word to describe today's guest. It's true, she's creative, she's a leader, she's successful, curious, energetic. But in the end, I decided the best way to describe Laura Jordan Bamback is as a restless pioneer. She broke new ground recently when she and her all-female co-founders set up their agency, Uncharted. Building on an astonishing career which has spanned being one of the very first people to learn to code on the World Wide Web, to being president and CCO at Grey. But on top of that, she's also a speaker, author, artist, activist, and founder of both She Says and Oko. What strikes me most about Laura is that she just has this drive to use her creativity. It might sound obvious considering what she does for a living, but I think the drive to be creative, whether it's in her work, supporting different causes, playing with AI, or in her own art, is what keeps her so focused that she's able to spin more plates than anybody I've ever met. So here's my conversation with Laura Jordan Bamback. Laura, welcome to Marketing Room 101.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
So you say it's nice to be here, but I have invited you down into the depths of marketing hell, really. To get us started, could you please describe the room for our listeners? What's it actually like in here?
It is like every other office or every other career that I've ever walked into. I think there is nothing particularly special about it, but It is as bland. Am I allowed to swear?
Oh, absolutely.
It's as bland as fuck. And the people sitting in front of me could be doing any job. And the entire place feels as if it doesn't have a creative heart and we've forgotten who we are.
It feels like somewhere that lacks any form of soul or identity.
Exactly. I think if you can walk into a creative studio and it feels like you could be walking into a call center or IFA office, then that is my idea of hell.
It feels like somewhere that's probably quite silent. You can just hear
probably
the tapping.
Probably quite silent, probably quite white, probably nothing on the walls. Probably everyone sat at the same kinds of desks, on the same kinds of chairs, doing the same kinds of things, coming in at the same time. Yeah, definitely a lack of conversation with a crappy coffee machine.
Out of interest, so for you personally, you're describing the flip side of that, I guess, is you work best in a proper creative studio.
Absolutely.
Is that better in a studio, in an office space with other people, or is that better in your own studio space at home?
That's a really good question. You know what? I like being around people. I think the creative energy that you get from talking to other people, bouncing ideas around is really invaluable. And it's hard. Creativity, even though there's not really a formal apprenticeship, it's an apprenticeship career, right? Everything you learn on the job. So if you don't have the people around you to learn from, or if you're not around to help grow the other people in your team, when you get a little bit more experience, then creativity just doesn't move as fast and it's not as vibrant and it's not as dynamic. I think there's a space for working at home. You know, if you're writing or if you need a little bit of, that concentration space. But for the most part, what I've seen is the more senior people who are more comfortable with their kind of creative energy fare better working at home. But that's to the detriment of all the people coming up through the industry that really need to kind of learn from them. So I would say, like, get in there and be around people. Yeah, I love the creative energy of being around people.
It's a really interesting point and something that's overlooked, isn't it? At Principles, we do a 4-day working week for everybody. And we did that in exchange for asking them to be in the office all the time. And I think, like you say, some people can work incredibly well. Experienced people can work incredibly well from home. But what's often overlooked is they're therefore not passing on that information. They're not passing on that experience and growing that younger talent, are they?
Yeah.
So you've spent a number of decades or so working everything from working in a sandwich shop to randomly taxidermy, and then a number of digital and creative roles, including becoming the CCO and CEO of Grey in London. But you've recently set up a new venture. Can you tell me and the listeners a little bit about Uncharted?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're not sure, and I'm sure there is another, I want to caveat this with, I'm sure there is another fully female-founded creative agency out there because it's so much harder for women to get into the spotlight. But certainly, when we looked around, It seems like we might be the first fully female founded creative agency in the UK. There's obviously Joan in the US doing really well, and there's sort of a number of others on that global stage. And we were founded by Fern, Hattie and myself, really because we took a look at what was happening in the market, what was happening in terms of what clients really needed and where they weren't being serviced. There's a lot of fear in the industry. There's a lot of uncertainty in the industry, and clients, you know, as with anyone, when there's a lot of fear and a lot of uncertainty and budgets and pressures, you tend to stick with what you know. But sticking with what you know is not a successful strategy for growing a business these days. So, you know, we were seeing a lot of CMOs, what have you, with really reducing return on investment to their, you know, traditional or even like digital social advertising plans or comms plans. So we set ourselves up. We say we lead clients into culture with confidence. But what that means is really we have all the tools and all the technology to help you do the thing that you really want to do that maybe you haven't done before. And, you know, a lot of that is stepping into culture and thinking about pieces of work that actually exist where the audience is rather than kind of more traditional stuff, rather than just filling a media plan. So we've got all the tools, you know, we're deeply AI enabled and sort of tech and data enabled to allow clients that confidence to do something new. And then on the other side, also, when you're thinking about culture and community, when I went out and spoke to so many creative people, there is a deep sense of loneliness in our creative community at the moment. Even if you're working full time in an agency, I think people are also feeling scared, unsettled, worried for their jobs. The companies that they work for aren't necessarily fulfilling their creative souls. And a lot of the opportunities to kind of network or share are kind of disappearing in a much more kind of formal industrialized environment, I would say. The other side of what we do alongside the technology is we have not only sort of a core team, but then a bigger crew of, it's about 60 people at the moment, incredible creatives, a lot of whom are not in advertising. You know, they may have come into advertising and popped out the other side because they were from a diverse background and weren't supported. They do advertising as a side hustle, or they're a musician, or they're a poet, or a number of different things. And people from all over the world, well, they may have retired, or they may still be doing their A-levels, because we have one amazing person in our crew who's 17 and doing his A-levels at the moment. And that broader crew allows us to actually work with ideas that genuinely come from culture, not from this kind of like monoculture of advertising creatives, which is, you know, which is changing and developing. And, you know, that's much better than what it was when I first started. But we went kind of broad and deep with like really interesting creative minds that we can bring onto briefs.
I think it's exciting to hear the term diversity used, not just in the way that many agencies or many businesses will look at diversity as perhaps gender, perhaps ethnic diversity, in whichever way. But actually, you're thinking about it in a much broader sense. You're thinking about it as in neurodiversity, people in all those different senses, people who are in the nicest possible way. It sounds like a crew of many people might describe themselves as misfits.
Absolutely. Feels like we kind of, you know, call it internally our pirate crew. And it is misfits. It's also people at the top of their game who are winning huge accolades. It's also, you know, people who never really wanted to get to advertising in the first place, but they're incredibly creative. And actually, we can use their skill set on projects to get us to more interesting places. But the beauty of it is the coming together of it. So it's like the building of that community, which is, you know, people sharing inspiration when they see inspiration all the time, above and beyond working on projects. It's more about building that sense of creative center.
So to shift this a tiny bit, you were perhaps one of the first people in the world to learn to code on the World Wide Web and to use the internet as a creative space, I guess. So if the Industrial Revolution had the likes of Brunel and Stevenson, the Digital Revolution might have had the Berners-Lee and Birnbach combo, if we're being modest. I think you're perhaps in quite a unique position when we look at AI and what's happening with AI. And I wondered what you think your experience firsthand with the rise of digital in the 90s can tell us about what's happening with the rise of AI now.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, when I first came across the proto World Wide Web, when I was playing with Mosaic in like 1992, 93, I want to say, it really excited me, even though it was, you know, it was all text-based. It was very academic. But what really excited me is you could see the potential for connection. connecting people on a global scale. And so when Netscape first came out, which was the first real kind of visual browser, the first consumer-friendly browser, making things for that platform, even though there weren't a lot of people on it, you could see this potential for, you know, the piece of work that I'm making now has an audience of the whole world. It felt really revolutionary and it really excited me. And it's what drove me to keep learning how to code and to build and, you know, ultimately have the career that I have now. AI has given me the same kind of feeling in a way that a lot of the technologies over the last 20 years hasn't. And I've been thinking about why that is. And actually, I think although these platforms, you know, yes, they are all owned by sort of big corporations or what have you, it feels like at the moment it's an artist's tool or it's an exploratory tool. It's not like, although it was quite exciting when Facebook first launched and it had open APIs and you could pull their logins onto your web page and do cool things with it and what have you. You know, there have been things that have happened, but the rise of social, which has probably been the kind of the biggest consumer facing thing that's happened in between, it felt much more corporate, felt much less playful, felt much more like you were being told to work into a platform rather than being given a platform to experiment with. Whereas AI, you know, feels 100% completely experimental. And because of that, I think creative people are in a really good position to kind of master it and to make new things with it. And I would say that in the broader sense, because actually some of the most interesting AI is not the generative AI. It's not like video and Sora and those kinds of things. It's actually in data processing and testing and building digital twins or personas and some of the more kind of strategic tools which allow you to get into much more interesting corners, I think, of human experience. So that's the bit of AI I think that is the most exciting. What I would say is, having been around the block a couple of times and been so excited by the possibilities of the internet and the utopia it was going to create, and no, it didn't. And then, you know, social and connecting people and how incredible that was. And then you realize you've been data mining for a massive corporation. We do need to be careful about how we are using it and what we allow it to do and how we make sure that it benefits creative humans rather than as an efficiency tool to replace them.
Yeah. How do we keep the reins on AI? Is it possible to keep the reins on AI so that it does help us to feed human creativity, or an ally of human creativity and not an enemy to it, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. And I spend a lot of my time in AI, which is, you know, how the internet worked as well. The best way to keep the reins on it is to get in there and really learn it. It would be like, you know, when I did work experience when I was at school, there was no kind of, you know, graphic design on a computer. Photoshop wasn't in wide use. People were still doing scans with Pantone markers and using a bromide machine. And, you know, 4 years later or something, when I went to university, suddenly everything was on the computer. That shift, we suddenly didn't lose all graphic designers, but people's jobs did change. And you don't get a lot of people now who scamp and spend thousands of pounds on Pantones, right? It's a different kind of creative. And it's really important, I think, that all of us who are here at this transition just really get to grips with how to use the tools.
Yeah, no, I think that's really useful to any marketer, or not just in marketing, I think across all industries. This podcast is not sponsored by Principles Agency. If it was, it probably wouldn't sound like it was recorded on a SingStar. But as it's where I work and they give me and everyone else a free day off every week, which I spend doing this, I feel obliged to give it a plug. At Principles, we're obsessed with the word unforgettable, meaning we help everyday brands come to mind quicker and stay there longer. We do this using a set of principles the team and I developed. This means making brands distinctive, entertaining, visible, and consistent. If you'd like to chat about how we can help you with any brand creation, brand activation, or brand building project, just pop me, Ben Norman, or Principles Agency a message on LinkedIn, or head to principlesagency.co.uk. Now, you're here today because you would like to banish something from the marketing world forever.
Yes.
Can you please let me know what you would like to can?
I would like to banish the poor application of measurement and testing and poor econometric models. It is the bane of my life. This debate that continues about kind of performance versus brand marketing, when it is entirely obvious that you need both things, you know, performance marketing over the last 15 years has really won out because of its ability to be measured. You know, it's harder to measure things like brand affinity, what have you, you know, and more expensive, right? So measuring digital stuff is cheap and it's easy and it gives you a number, and it gives a number that is easily reportable to the CEO. And there have been a ton of businesses which we have created for ourselves that measure this stuff. You know, obviously social has been at the forefront of this and reporting its measurement, but we haven't been measuring the right things. And because we haven't been measuring the right things, there's that phrase, you know, if you have a hammer, everything's a nail. Mm. We are, you know, in a position where stuff is being kind of tracked and falsehoods are being given as true. So for example, I don't know, like blue headings are working like really well and they're returning bigger kind of click-through rate or engagement rate or something, blah, 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 blah. Therefore, there are 1,000 businesses who will go out and say, well, the answer is to make all the headings blue. But the answer is not that. The answer is a really clear idea of who the brand is, a brilliant creative idea executed across all of the channels, including performance marketing, tracked properly. And that holistic view of a brand is really important. But what upsets me and why I want to put it into Room 101 is there is so much complaint now about the fact, you know, budgets are going down. Agencies are being cannibalized by, you know, whether it's by media or performance marketing is taking the majority of the budget, or all of this testing that we're doing is reducing the budget, the overall budget. Clients are never going to have more money. They're only ever going to have less. And we need to do the right thing by them. And there is no like joined up holistic drive from the industry to really make a case for what we're doing and to make it better. And instead, we're just spending more and more of that dwindling money on stuff that doesn't matter. You know, we'll end up with AI bots talking to AI bots about AI made content. You're able to measure it, and so that's fine, and that's something that you can kind of deliver as a brand, but it doesn't actually grow your brand. It doesn't make people fall in love with your brand, and it's certainly not creative.
I'm really excited by what you're saying, because I do think one of the things that I've noticed growing is a lack of faith in the intangible creative idea.
Yeah.
Lack of belief that sometimes it's not about what's the sort of phrase that there's no correlation between how measurable something is and how important it is. And just because you can measure whether that banner is more effective in one color or another, just because you can measure an increased click-through mm-hmm. rate or an increased conversion rate on one design versus another, you're missing the bloody point, aren't you? You're completely missing that if we create entertaining, interesting, culturally relevant
yes.
stuff, people will be excited by it and they will buy your brand more. But it's hard to measure that. If anything, it is intangible, and we have to at some point draw a line and accept that there is a level of intangible creative power we can't harness.
I agree. And I think there's been a lot of work by the IPA, you know, bringing together kind of more of the business side of the agency with the creative side of agency so they understand each other. But I really feel like I almost want to do a bring a CFO to breakfast day, because I think even the financial teams within the creative businesses don't really understand the craft of being a creative designer. Is a little easier to see, obviously, because you can see the output. But, you know, it feels magical being able to pull something from thin air and create something that is of value to the business and to brands. But there's a real lack of appreciation of the craft that goes into that and the skill, and the fact that a gut instinct is actually a really finely honed tool that you know, you've maybe been working 30 years on. Creative director is a creative director because they understand what the right thing to do is, because they understand how to connect a brand and a creative idea, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a little intangible. And it really upsets me more than anything that we've done it to ourselves. And we still continue to do it. We still keep on investing more and more money. Our industry is investing so much money in investing in AI because they're scared of AI. But I'm not seeing as much or enough thinking about how that works in terms of generative AI. What we are doing within our businesses should be made completely alongside them and in tandem with them. What do you need? How should this work? How can we be making you as creators more effective so that we can charge a higher value for you, because human creativity is of high value? And instead, you're seeing these kind of machines being created that remove the agency from creatives and designers even more. It just really pains me that we're doing this to ourselves.
Yeah, I think sort of sometimes there is a point where we need to be better as an industry. I think I'd heard you say somewhere that if you can be replaced with a machine, whether that's a machine to deliver a process or machine intelligence, you need to step up. You need to raise your bar. You need to raise your level of creativity to use the new tools that are available, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think creative agencies, they're called creative agencies for a reason. Those businesses need to really get behind and back the creators with what they need as well. You know, that creative people have always got the least amount of training, often the least amount of support, are treated like infants who are just in it for themselves, which again, like, really annoys me, because we are not. We are an intrinsic part of the product, and it's really, really important. But you know, you're often told we don't need to spend budget on that, or you know, don't worry your pretty little head about the complicated kind of math things, the business things. So important for a creative to understand the business of their clients. Like, what are they actually trying to achieve? How much more product do they need to shift? What markets? When is the bonus cycle? And what is your client? What are their KPIs? You can make them successful as well as the business successful. All of that stuff is really important and really good creative input, but we're kind of kept to one side and then told that we're selfish. And, you know, don't forget you're not making art. And it's like, we all know we're not making art. But our roles and our progression often counts on, like, how many Cannes Awards have you won? So therefore, that has to become really important to us. So it's, I think we've got ourselves into a pickle as an industry. And the way to get ourselves out of the pickle is to put creativity back into the center and just educate the entire industry on how it works. I think that financial people should be right in there understanding what it is that we do.
I think frustration builds amongst many creative people when there is a desire to proceduralize or formalize the creative process, doesn't it? Where it's like, going back to what we were saying earlier about having faith that sometimes great creative can't be measured in a tangible way. I think the System One's got us much closer in recent years to being able to measure the intangible side, the emotive side. But even then, it's like, right, we've got this magic new measurement system. Now we can then build a formula around that for how our creative works, or we can look at what's being kicked out of our metrics from other research methods. And it's like, there's this desperation to try and create the formula when there is no formula, right?
System One, I really think it's a great platform because it is really emotional, and that is good, but it's still not like the font of all knowledge that you have to bow down to. You know, testing is about giving you more feedback so you understand what's happening more. It's not, you know, they're not gods.
No, there will always be amazing ideas that test poorly because 100%. They just hit differently. When you talk about the cultural relevance, you can't always pick that up, and there will be something that just lands right but might be blocked by testing. And that's my fear, is some of the best ideas, some of the best campaigns that have ever gone out, if they were tested using whether it's System One, whether it's an old school focus group, whatever it might be, yes, it's there to improve ideas, but if we bow down to it entirely, we might miss out on some moments of genius.
Where I love testing, so we actually, one of our partners is called Loops, and part of the reason I love them is their interface is really easy. It's easy enough for creatives to use. Part of it is that you get proper emotional kind of responses from things, but it's rapid. And it is cheap, which means that you can kind of iterate and play with things, and it allows the testing to be playful. So you don't have to finish something or get to a storyboard and then test it. And that's like a massive gate that has to be passed to move through. And so because it can be playful, you can actually use it to get to braver work. So an example, using it, looking at an illustration style, and the client felt very strongly that the illustration style wouldn't work for the audience because it was too childlike. And I felt like I didn't think that was the case. And it didn't cost much to go, you know what, the client hasn't asked for this, but can we just like test some of these illustration styles and actually get a sense of whether it is going to work? So I don't want to say it's going to work and then the client going, told you so, people think it's too childlike or what have you. But actually people came back and they absolutely loved it. And so then I was able to go to, you know, the client, okay, I understand that this is not for you, but could we find a style which is a bit braver, a little, has a bit more personality, because the audience really, really loves it. And that helps to make braver work. That was really useful as a creative for that testing to be put in my hands. Now, I wouldn't be able to do that if that was a System One or a Kantar or anything like that. But with Loops, I can go, can I just test these things and get something back in 24, 48 hours?
putting that control back in the creative hands, giving you guys faith, not treating you like you should be in that box and we'll deal with the client or we'll deal with the research. So I am convinced, I'm just trying to think of how we wrap this up. So if we're going to put, maybe describe it as poor application of data in creative.
Yeah, and I think just even more simply, maybe measuring the wrong things.
Measuring the wrong things.
The cult of measuring the wrong things.
Okay, so in Marketing 101, we now have the cult of measuring the wrong things. That is going to stay here. How does that make you feel?
Very, very happy.
Fantastic. So that's in here. While you're here, before you leave, would you like to take anything back to the marketing world?
Yes, and I think I've spoken about it before, but I want to bring creative community back into the marketing world. Every agency I've ever worked at, which has been at the top of their creative game, has been that way because of the creative energy that has been built by that sense of community. So you are sparking off people, you're sparking off things, you feel like trusted and respected for your particular skill set. And you know that if you don't have that skill set, you've got kind of someone else there to lean on and you've all got each other's back. That creativity at the center, creatives at the center, creatives in control, comes from a sense of community. And that sense of community, it's really not everywhere like it should be. It should be in every agency, big and small. You know, it shouldn't be down to the little indies to try to create that sense of community. It really needs to be absolutely everywhere. And the biggest agencies have got the most to lose and they've also got the most to gain.
Interestingly, this conversation is a product of creative community. I spoke to Vicky Ross on this podcast and Vicky recommended yourself as a future guest. And I know she's done a lot to inspire that with Copywriters Unite and to inspire communities across the world now. What would you say, other than communities like that are across the industry, what advice might you give to an agency to do the sort of things that you're doing to start inspiring that creative community?
Yeah, well, look, I think kind of stepping back into where I was at Grey, right? When I was CCO, the first thing I realized is there was no sense of creative community there and went about building it within the business. And then that was so successful. That's how I ended up being president as well. They're like, you're pulling the culture. It's at its heart, it's a culture. It's a culture of sharing, of inspiring, of making sure that every creative role is really valued and people see the value in creativity within the business. So I think, you know, if you're a creative leader, there's a lot you can be doing there. Like I said, I think where I would start if I was stepping into a role like that again would be to bring the people furthest away from that right into the center. So bring the finance people, bring the people team, bring everyone into that community so they can experience it, because that energy is so electric and so addictive and so positive. But yeah, it was making sure that I understood everyone, what their creative visions and goals were and where they wanted to get to and who they liked working with and what they liked working on and what they didn't like working on, and doing as much as possible around that team building and sharing and bringing people together and being and that vulnerability that's at the heart of creativity as well, I think, and the empathy. But it's amazing what you can do within a business to bring people together and to get that energy going.
So I think it's really interesting you've referenced bringing, for example, the finance people into that, bringing different people in. So we're talking about a creative community, not just a community for creatives.
Yeah.
So across that business, like you say, it's a creative agency. That should mean that we are all inspired creatively. We are all part of a creative community throughout the agency. And maybe this is where some of the tension comes sometimes. It's we've got a creative team and then no one else is allowed to be creative. And we're not saying that other people, the finance person, is going to start doing scamps, but we have this community across the agency that is.
And we all understand the product that we're making. Yeah.
Okay, so I am convinced. So we're going to leave measuring the wrong things in Marketing Room 101. You are going to take with you creative community and distribute that, not just, and I think not just across agencies, I get across all businesses in the marketing world. Now, before you go, my brother is a big fan of this show and he doesn't work in the industry and it's a little bit random, but I do let him ask each guest one question. So his question for you, and I gave him a little bit of background, is, I understand you used to work in a taxidermy shop that occasionally experimented by combining multiple animals. So if you could be a combination of two animals, what would you be?
Oh my goodness, what a brilliant question. Okay, I would have I'm just trying to imagine what's going to look really good. I mean, I'm definitely going to have to be part bat because I'm an old goth at heart. And
oh, that's great.
Who wouldn't want to be a bat? And also, there are a lot of bats in Sydney, and that's where I come from. So half bat, and then maybe half. I'm not quite sure you'd be able to stitch them together very well, but my favourite animal is a frog.
Right, a bat
frog. Maybe a half bat, half frog. I'd be able to jump really high and fly and swim. I absolutely love frogs. I love amphibians, and I just think it's so fascinating to be able to kind of live underwater. Oh, you know what? Half axolotl, half bat.
Half axolotl. Now, I recognise the word axolotl.
They're like they're related to a newt, so they're still kind right. of semi. Well, they're not amphibious; they live underwater. But if you put a little bit of iodine in the water, actually, they can come out of the water. They sort of come out of the water. I'm sure in Mexico they're probably fully amphibious.
So, is an axolotl a? I think this is the animal that Guinness use at the start of the ad, where they go right back in time to the when humans first left the water.
Possibly. It does look a little bit like that. They've got the reason I say axolotl is that I've had axolotls as pets more than any other pets. And when I was just thinking about being a goth, going back to when I was a teenager and I was really into The Cure. And because axolotl's gills go out like Robert Smith's hair, I had two axolotls, a black one called Robert and a white one called Mary, which is the name of his wife.
So you're going to be an axolotl with bat
with
wings.
With bat wings, yeah.
But you'll still like have the
in
ability
the water,
to
out of the water, in yeah. the sky.
Brilliant, right. That's a better answer than I could have imagined to for that. So that's absolutely excellent.
Fabulous.
So, Laura, thank you very much for coming in. It's been quite a journey. How can people get hold of you? How can people find out more about Uncharted? How can they reach out to thank you for coming on the show?
If you go to unchartedstudio.com, that's where you'll find us. And I am Laura JB, Laura Jordan Bambach, Laura JB on LinkedIn. I'm very easy to find because there are very few Jordan Bambachs.
Laura, thank you very, very much for coming in.
Thank you.
So that was my conversation in Marketing Room 101 with Laura Jordan Bambach. If you enjoyed it, could you please leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts? Because doing so tells Apple and Spotify, etc., to introduce more people to the show, which means I feel slightly happier about myself. But more importantly, it means I can keep attracting the most incredible guests like Laura.